This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you on the show until midday, which is pretty much the next hour. It is just after 11 on a Monday, which means it is time for our preview of tonight's DL debate, joined on Zoom by the wonderful Brendan Devaney. Brendan, good morning to you.
Good man, Donal. How's things?
Oh, grand, thank you. Brendan, a good weekend of GAA again, and I suppose I'm sure you're an unbiased reporter, but you'll have enjoyed that Unions game.
Oh, yeah, well, kind of, don't you know, it's so lopsided like that. You know, I know their draw lads very well. They're a great bunch, but it's difficult when a team gets taken apart like that. You know, there's probably nothing great in St. Unions in terms of learning and that other. So we have some of these, you know, mismatches in this championship. You know, it's a big group system. Don't say the top four go through the quarterfinals. Now the next eight play each other to join them in the quarterfinals, and the bottom four then will play off in relegation. And of course, our draw. They have 2 points on the board at the minute, but St. Noel's, Milford and Killybegs, yet they register a point. So listen, it was an interesting weekend. 4 weeks in a row, championship. Don, there's a lot happening in the county across the three championships, and it's a lot of stuff to keep up with. But it's been an interesting championship so far. And I mean, teams like Rua, 3-1 from three, Kilcare, Glenswally, you know, they're all putting their hand up to be a possible contender for St. Unions. And Eid Conall just tucked in behind them because they played each other and drew, you know, Gidor after that. So that team, those teams in their mix, don't all fancy themselves of beating each other, because there's no doubting that a lot of people are looking at St. Unions and Eid Conall that bit ahead of the rest. But certainly there's some teams there that'll certainly give either of them sides an interesting encounter. And of course, two of them playing. I did the draw there yesterday out in the park. Life's full of first, don't it? It was the first time I've done something like that. And the big draw there was, of course, Niamh Connell and Glenswally playing in the final round of Group 4 matches next week.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one. You'll be looking at the weekend's games with Brendan Kilcoyne and Gary McDade tonight, of course, on the DL debate. Also looking ahead to that Glenswally and Niamh Connell clash and other clashes coming up as well.
Yeah, getting the views of the two lads. I was out in Glenswally watching their game with Dunlow yesterday, and I suppose on top of everything else, don't just the day was in at the Weller, you know, you know, after the terrible summer we've had there, it was just such a nice occasion. Big crowd out in Glenswally, watched that match. It was an entertaining game, and then come back to the park, and there was just such a different atmosphere because of the evening it was, and that's why we want in championship. That's where it needs to be played, and those nice evenings and that, and certainly that tie is a massive one. Of course, the derby of Gidor and Dunlow is another huge game in there as well, after they beat Gidor beat Clonakilty late the weekend. So lots of wee permutations in there. Teams trying to avoid relegation, other teams trying to get into that, at least that pre-quarter final berth. So the good thing is, though, I suppose, compared with the group stages, there's everyone has something to play for going into these last games, and you don't have teams that are sitting top of a group and it doesn't really matter in their last game, which can affect the outcome for everybody. Everybody's going into this now. No one is actually mathematically into the quarterfinals yet. So everyone has to go out and play, which keeps the senior championship very interesting.
And we're shortly going to be getting to knockout stages, and that's when it really gets tasty. But as you say, for now, they all have to be on top of their game, and some really nice games coming up. Now, as well as Donegal, of course, there are other counties in Ulster, and you'll have Neil Loughran on tonight from the Irish News just to see what's happening elsewhere across the province.
Yeah, listen, we always like to keep things informed. And I think all of us, we have a wee bit of an interest in what's going around. Obviously, Tyrone hasn't kicked off yet, but what's happening in around the provinces, and of course the bigger teams out there. You think of the likes, obviously, Glen, also champions, how they're getting on. The likes of, you know, Ballybay won Monaghan last year. They're looking like they're in a relegation this year. Kilcoo, of course, Carrie Lacey's up there now. They had a big result at the weekend and that. So just, yeah, chat to Neil, just look and see how they're shaping up, because you still have this thing where it's interesting from our own perspective, you know, who comes out of Donegal and who they're going to meet in Ulster, and how those bigger sides are getting on in there in particular. And a good chat to Aaron Kiernan last night about the Armagh Championship. He's still playing me Cross McGlenn. And very interesting, the different championships, don't like in Armagh, for example, the league feeds into the championship. So where you finish in the league gives you a seeding for the championship, because our own league there was you know, there wasn't a lot to play for in it, and no one was taking that big of interest in it leading into the championship. So different counties have different things going on. So myself and Neil's going to have a chat about that as well.
Finally, Brendan, just something I was wondering, given that we had the announcement of Jim McGuinness taking over the county quite recently, obviously it's going to be a while before the National League, it's going to be a while before we get into the business end of inter-county football again, but was there any noticeable sort of atmosphere around the various grounds at the weekend, you know, a sense of excitement that McGuinness is back, a sense of excitement that maybe that there's something in the offing, and were people maybe putting in the extra bit of effort, were people putting in the extra bit of work just you know, to stake their claim for inter-county place?
Well, I would think so, Don. There's certainly been a great buzz about the county since Jim took over, and you know, there's so many aspects to this around Jim, and you know, if he didn't come in now, Don, you know, you were kind of thinking who, a bit like last year, the fact of someone of his caliber to come in, the backroom team that he's put together, and as I was saying previously on the show, you know, there's about seven or eight lads from 2012 out there coaching now and players involved. And, of course, Luke Barrett's in there as well with Jim. So you have now, by the time Jim finishes up, you have a load of people that will be there ready-made to step in. And they're not really there now. So from Jim's first time there, he's created these All-Ireland winners and loads of lads that are coaching. And now from his second tenure, he'll have ready-made guys to come in as well. So there's so many sides to Jim taking over, and it's all positive and it's all great. There's no doubting he'll get a lift from the lads, and we're just blessed that we have him and that he's taking the time to come back and take our team again.
So all that positivity about, plus great weather as well. It was a good weekend in Donegal, it seems.
Yeah, I even got a bit of sunburn there. I wasn't expecting. We've nearly put the sunscreen away till next year, but I got a lovely blast out in the glen there yesterday. Mick Murphy very kindly even brought me a coffee at half time, but then he stung me for a ticket, so I said it was an expensive enough wee coffee, but you got to chip in when you're there, Dole.
Oh, absolutely. DL Debate, Brendan, on tonight after the 7 o'clock news.
That's it, Don.
Now, have you ever considered public speaking but been a little bit nervous at the idea? If that's the case, don't go anywhere. A very important discussion coming up in just a moment that might just be the ticket as far as you're concerned. Before we do that, though, just want to remind you, finally, of our quiz before we close the lines. Our sponsors this week are Fit 20. We're giving you a chance to win a 3-month membership with Fit 20. You can get stronger in just 20 minutes. Train once a week with a personal trainer in a climate-controlled gym. Just answer a simple question each day. A winner will be selected daily to be entered into a draw on Friday. And the question today is, who won the Women's World Cup this year? Was it Spain or Ireland? Who won the Women's World Cup this year? Was it Spain or Ireland? Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000. And as we say, there'll be a daily winner, and then the daily winner goes into a draw, and then the draw takes place on Friday of the 5 daily winners, and someone will win that 3-month membership with Fit 20. Now, as I said, if you have an interest in public speaking, or if you have a fear of public speaking and would perhaps like to do something about that, Toastmasters may be the answer. Toastmasters meet in Dillon's Hotel, and the new season starts on this week. It's on the 6th of September, and by my reckoning, today's the 4th, which means it's Wednesday. So, and if it's not, I'll be corrected very, very quickly. Oh, it's the 5th. I do apologise. It's the 5th, which means it's tomorrow, which is Tuesday. Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to our two guests, and we're joined in studio by the president of Toastmasters in Letterkenny, who is Brian Marshall, and by Leila Worth, who is the PRO. And I'm going to go first to yourself, Brian, if I may. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Donal.
Brian, in terms of Toastmasters, I mean, we've all heard of Toastmasters. A lot of people won't be quite sure what Toastmasters is. So the first question is, I suppose, the obvious one. What's Toastmasters?
Toastmasters, I would count as the world's biggest self-help club for people to improve their public speaking skills. There's, at this moment, 270,000 members worldwide, 14,200 clubs, and it's in existence in 148 different countries. And all of these clubs are just set up by people who are volunteers who try to help each other with a bit of information and guidance to improve their public speaking.
I'm sure a lot of the time someone comes because they've been asked to be the best man at their best friend's wedding and they've got to make a speech, or people come because, you know, they need to stand up and make a presentation at a meeting or whatever. And Leila, as the PRO of Toastmasters, I mean, is this a matter of people go to Toastmasters out of necessity, or is it people go to Toastmasters because they just perhaps have an anxiety or they have a nervousness and they see that as a way to address it?
Well, I think Toastmasters is for everyone. And for me, I had a fear of public speaking from a very young age. So it's really helped me gain confidence in public speaking. And everyone's really friendly. It's a safe place. We also have a laugh. And yeah, everyone goes for their different reasons. Some people are naturally gifted at public speaking and some people need to work on it. So, yeah.
And it was during COVID that you yourself sort of developed that interest or developed that impetus to do something about it. Presumably over the course of COVID, this all moved online.
Yes, I joined through COVID. So it was on Zoom first, which was interesting. And then, which was a nice start for me because, yeah, I was quite shy at the start. And then going to Dylan's, it was a lot better to be in with everyone.
So presumably you had, and I had something similar with the thing I did on Zoom with people, where even the weekend before last, I met two people that I've become really good friends with online. I met them in Dublin for the first time in person. I'm sure you had that experience too, where you actually developed friendships online and then suddenly got to meet the people face to face.
Yes, definitely. And then there's a lot of people in Toastmasters who do parkour in Letterkenny as well. So it's kind of nice. There's, a lot going on in the group.
Brian, from the point of view of Toastmasters, it's an interesting one because it comes from the community. It is an international organisation, but the local club is very much a local club. This isn't somebody coming in from outside and sort of imposing a philosophy or imposing something. This is very much local people coming together and doing it themselves.
Oh, definitely. The thing is that although the main Toastmasters programme, and once you join up, you get access to a lot of information and video back up to improve your learning and make suggestions. When it comes to the person themselves, everybody has their own individual style. And we're not out to change that. But if we can improve, tweak, and give you the confidence to stand up and make your own best presentation, that's what we want to achieve. And we achieve it with just everybody pointing out what you're doing well and what, in their opinion, as members, we would suggest to an individual to maybe improve their public speaking skills. And practice, practice, practice will build up that confidence that, hey, I'm doing my best, the best that I can, and this club is helping me do that.
Is it the case that most people are actually far better at public speaking than they think they are? And that one of the biggest things you have to overcome when you first join is almost that mental block that people have where they think, I can't do this, no one's going to listen to me, no one's going to pay any attention to me, when in fact they're actually far better equipped than they themselves believe.
Oh yes, I would agree totally that 90% of our members come to us and they are scared stiff of speaking. The joke has always been made that in statistics, 70% of people said that they were more scared of public speaking than they were of death, which means that if you were standing at a funeral, you'd rather be in the box than giving the oration. But really, whenever it comes to that, there are people who are really, really scared. They have a story to tell and they haven't the means to put it out there. Toastmasters, where everybody is rooting for you to improve your skills, is the perfect venue to get over that nervousness and gain some confidence in your own ability.
And Leila, I suppose you're the proof of that, because you know you said over COVID, which is what, two and a half, three years ago, perhaps at the tops, you were nervous to the extent that you had to go looking for some help, and you found that through Toastmasters. And what change has it made for you in terms of both your own self-confidence and your own ability to get what you have to say and what you want to say across to other people?
Well, even at university, I avoided any modules that had public speaking. So I was so afraid of public speaking. And I think I did take maybe a bit slower, and it's still a continuous journey. But I definitely feel like I've gained a lot of confidence. I mean, I still get really nervous before speeches, but you feel really... Yeah, you feel like you've accomplished something after you've done each speech. And the first one only has to be about 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's not a huge thing. Sometimes it feels like it, but yeah.
And it's not just like the best man speech or standing up to make an after dinner speech in a situation where perhaps you're a chair of an organisation or whatever. This also holds for meetings, for workplace discussions. This it isn't just standing up in a big huge hall and making a speech. This could be just making a presentation to 8 people.
Yes.
I mean, it goes right down to that level.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is though that you can pick what you want to talk about, so it could be anything that you're interested in. And like I've been learning how to weave the past 2 years in Donegal with one of the masters in Ardra, John Hina. So I did my first speech on that. So it was quite nice to do something that I was interested in. And there's so many different topics that people talk about it, and they're really interesting.
Yeah. And I suppose, Brian, too, people move at their own pace. I mean, I know you do have sort of competitions and symposiums, and you get together with Toastmasters from other areas, and there are national events and so on and so forth, but people will move at their own pace. I'm sure some people develop to the point where they're actually maybe ready to stand up and make a speech at a regional gathering. Others perhaps not so quick, but it's not a matter of you have to do X, Y and Z at this time. It's a matter of you move at your own pace.
It is a matter that you move at your own pace. And the other thing is, once you start, the first thing we try to do is get you into what we call a path. And the Pathways program is designed where you do a questionnaire whenever you come in to be a member. You decide what you want out of Toastmasters, and then the Pathways will direct you in a program to try to develop those skills and give you that objective that you have set out for. Now, say we have had people who have just joined to do a wedding speech. We are targeting transition year students this year because we think that you need interview skills. And there's a lot of people that are excellent candidates but just can't put themselves across whenever it comes to an interview, or whenever it comes to the workplace, that they can't put across their ideas. This is the sort of people we like to see coming in, because we can see improvement on them week after week.
Yeah. And I suppose that then begs the question, how many great ideas have been lost in business? How many great potential employees would have made a real difference have been lost to companies because the person with the idea or the person with the skills just didn't get it across at the interview or at the presentation? And I mean, and I'm sure we have lost great ideas over the years because it just wasn't transmitted.
Yes, I would agree again, because whenever you see that Primerica, which used to be in the town, were an American corporation, they could see the value of teaching their employees how to communicate. And Primerica had a very active Toastmasters club, but unfortunately they lost that whenever Tata took them over. We now have some of the Primerica people in our club because they saw the benefit of the continuing practicing of public speaking and the continuing getting feedback to improve and tweak and sell yourself the best way that you possibly can.
Lila, in terms of self-confidence, I mean, what difference does it make to you knowing that you have that skill now and knowing that you have a bit more confidence, you know, just to stand up and say something or to speak? I mean, in terms of your overall self-confidence, how much of a difference has it made?
Yeah, I feel like it's made a huge difference, but also I still have a long way to go because I've only done about 4 speeches in the past few years because it's taken me that long. But everyone's been really supportive. And anytime you do get up, you get a really good round of applause and you get feedback on how you can improve and what you did well. And yeah, I definitely feel like I don't know if I'm ready to speak in front of hundreds of people yet, but yeah.
But if someone told you, if someone had told you in 2020 that within 3 years you will stand up and make 4 speeches in public, would you have believed them?
No. Well, no way. So yes.
So you have come a long way.
Yeah,
and as you say, the journey isn't finished.
Yeah.
But you know, you've gone a long way past the front door.
Yeah.
You've taken way more than the first step.
I mean, yeah.
You know, and that's always a good thing. I mean, Brian, from your own point of view as president of Toastmasters, it must be lovely to sort of see people like Leila who come with a sense of nervousness and perhaps a sense of trepidation, and to see that growth. And you, in your position, I'm sure, are seeing that develop, and you're seeing it nurture and grow. It must be almost like raising children, that you can sort of see that wonderful development. Not that I'm suggesting there's that much of an age gap. But you know what I mean?
Yes, of course, Donal, I know what you mean. And yes, we as members love to see other members progress, because that's the total crux of the reason for us existing. It's a safe space where everybody can help everybody else improve.
Yeah.
And my problem wasn't actually that I was afraid of public speaking. I joined Toastmasters for a completely different reason, because I'm almost deaf in the top frequencies, and I was an awful listener. I could rabbit on, but I couldn't understand and wasn't getting the real meaning of what people were telling me. I had no idea at all about reading body language. I was very poor at reading tones, especially sarcasm. And I really did think I was brilliant. But that was the sort of thing that I learned from Toastmasters, and I'm continuing to learn from Toastmasters. So it's not just public speaking, but it's also all the other presentation skills that you need as well. And down the line, it also helps improve your leadership skills, because you can take on roles within the company and within the club and get experience. And again, there's online video backup for absolutely every role that you want to take on in the club, from speaking to president.
And as you said, it's a safe space, and you know, people will nurture and grow, and I'm sure there someone is going to stand up at some point, and maybe someone's going to freeze. And the important thing is that if that happens to them, everybody else in the room knows what they're going through, and everybody else in the room is going to support them and ensure that it doesn't become a blockage. And that level of support and that level of understanding. And I think if people realise that they're with people who are in the same situation that they are, rather than believe they're in some sort of hostile environment. And as you said, it's supportive. And that's really important element of it. And as you say, it's great to see the successes. But what's also maybe equally important is maybe when someone, you know, makes the effort and doesn't quite get there on the first occasion, you know they're going to be supported, they're going to be nurtured, they're going to be helped, they're going to be encouraged, and eventually they will stand up and do it.
Yes, that's it. That's, you've completely summed up the reason why we're there. We're there as a self help club. Everybody will have a different idea of what a perfect speech is, but everybody getting together can help that person who's speaking to make the best possible speech or the best possible presentation that they can, to sell themselves to whoever they have to sell themselves to. Should it be an interview panel? Should it be a work boss? Or should it be their fellow colleagues who they're working with and have to get a message across to?
And Leila, I'm sure, as well as the hard work of the speaking and the, you know, the learning and the developing, there's also the social element. There's also meeting up with people, having the cup of coffee, having the cup of tea, having the chat. And there's that social element is going to be a really important part of it too, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's lovely. Like, everyone's really nice. And yeah, we have a good laugh every meeting as well. Yeah, I just really enjoy it. But it would be lovely to get more young people involved, because I think I'm the only member that's under the age of 30. So it would be nice to get to to get more.
Okay, well, what that caught on, and you did say you were targeting specifically transition year students, Brian, as well. So, you know, that's good to hear. Listen, Brian Marshall, who is the president of Toastmasters Letterkenny, Leila Worth, who is the PRO of Toastmasters in Letterkenny. Yeah, and I bet if someone had told you 3 years ago you'd be the PRO of Toastmasters, you wouldn't believe that either.
Yeah, or been on Highland Radio.
Yeah, well, hey, you've just done it. Yeah. You've just done an interview on radio. Well done.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, and that's wonderful. So it's tomorrow night, Tuesday night's 7:30 in Dillon's Hotel in Letterkenny.
Yes, and if you can turn up 10 or 15 minutes earlier, especially if you're a new member, we like to see that because we like to get talking to you before the formalities of the meeting start.
Excellent. Brian, Leila, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.
We wish the new season and the new influx of young members to Toastmasters every success.
Thank you, Donal.
The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio with Donal Kavanagh. Looking at a few of your comments, we were speaking about the NCT earlier. Caller says, I got a text regarding the NCT as well. When I went online, it was the same. I couldn't get an appointment until December. I called them and they gave me an appointment for this week. So it's worth making that call. Now, I had a situation with a friend of mine where we were talking about the NCT and her NCT was coming up very shortly. And I said, look, you better go online and check. And she went online and she got an appointment for the next day. Now, sometimes you'll be lucky. Sometimes you call again. And I've heard that said before, actually. So maybe if you call the NCT centre, maybe you'll get a cancellation or whatever. But, you know, it's the quicker you get the appointment, obviously, the better. But what I would say is if you do have an appointment and it's a couple of weeks down the line, just have that confirmation sheet printed out, have it in the car, and then at least you have proof that you have the appointment booked, that you're not in any way dodging it. We've been told water in the Knockbrack, Listillion lower areas of Letterkenny have been off all weekend. Does anyone know what's happening? This morning there's nothing but a dribble from the tap. The last time this happened it took over 6 weeks to repair. The kids are now back at school. We can't really cope this time for that length of time. We'll certainly make inquiries with Irish Water, and I know that general area is sometimes problematic with regards to water supplies, but we'll certainly put that query out there. On climate change, ice core samples prove that increases in atmospheric CO2 LAG periods of lag periods of global warming by around 800 years. This is accepted science, which has never been challenged, but simply ignored. So current increases in atmospheric CO2 are from the medieval warm period, have absolutely nothing to do with humans. The entire climate disaster is based on pseudoscience and can be debunked with some basic research, so says a caller. Now, I am no expert, I am no scientist, but I will just basically say any reading I've done and any perspective I have on climate change has not led me to believe that it's not linked to humans. It seems to me it's very linked to humans. Mass was cancelled in one Mallon church yesterday. The reason it was cancelled, although no explanation was given in the newsletter, was to have a film crew park at Lag Church. Appalling behaviour, so says a caller. Did the parish get paid for this? Plenty of parking at the local hall in Mallon town. Now, and we have a response. To the best of our knowledge, notification was given and alternative masses and mass times were put on at a church less than 3 miles away. That's our understanding. So notification was given and alternative masses and mass times were put on in a church less than 3 miles away. So we are told. Now, Special Olympics, a very important organisation which performs a wonderful service. The Northwest Club are looking for volunteers and athletes aged 16 or over to join the club. Anyone with disabilities can contact Pat McLaughlin or Nicky McDermott via the Northwest Special Olympic Facebook page. And the number is 087-6944-822. So Pat McLaughlin, Nicky McDermott, contact them either via the Northwest Special Olympic Facebook page or on 087-6944-822. And that is looking for both volunteers and athletes to become involved in Special Olympics. Caller contacted us with regards to the park in Glencar, just behind the Glencar Shopping Centre, between Dr. McGinley Road and the Glencar Shopping Centre. The park, we're told, is littered day in and day out with takeaway food containers, alcohol cans and bottles. The antisocial behaviour is terrible. I'd include some photos, and we do indeed have some photos here. There's a lot of broken bottles, which are very dangerous for young children and dogs. There's an actual den in the bushes where people are drinking. That can be quite scary. But what's really worrying now is some of the shores are completely blocked and have been for a long time. There are weeds growing from them. It's quite scary considering how close it is to the hospital and the previous devastating flooding. These are ongoing issues. Now, it's a park I would have to say I do know because I live in that general Glencar area, and I would walk in that park occasionally, and it's a wonderful park and it's a wonderful facility. And yes, it can at times be littered and there can be some evidence of antisocial behaviour there. And hopefully that will get resolved. And we're happy to highlight that. Now, we are going to go back to Zoom because we are joined on Zoom by an assistant professor in criminology at the Department of Policy, Sociology and Criminology in the University of Birmingham. Now, that's what I call a mouthful. And Dr. Evelyn Sfingen, I hope I've got that right. Evelyn, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Evelyn Sfingen, right? Have I got the title right?
Yeah.
Sfingen.
Sfingen, yeah.
Very excellent. Good. If you don't mind, we'll just go with Evelyn from now on. As I say, Assistant Professor in Criminology at the University of Birmingham. Over half of people, evidence has emerged, have the capacity to commit a violent crime if provoked. That'll be surprising to many people who would say, no, I would never do that. And when we see reports of people reacting in certain ways, we go, oh, no, I would never do that. I would never do that. Perhaps we are more likely to do it than we think we are.
Absolutely. And I think crime is something that we, you know, the media draws us as this really violent offender, or, you know, you have Jeffrey Dahmer documentaries, and we all think that people who commit crime are somehow special and they have a different personality. Whereas in fact, actually, right and wrong are quite context dependent. For example, we'll know that killing a person is wrong. On the other hand, if you kill somebody in an act of war, or as a self-defense, or if you're saving somebody else, you know, that is not necessarily a bad thing. So actually, oftentimes the environment really influences us, right? And the context changes. And so what I did in my experiment, I just gave people hypothetical scenarios. And I said, so here's the situation, you know, would you punch this person given the circumstances? And once I started changing the circumstances and the environments, yeah, more than half of people said that, yes, they would definitely consider at least, and will probably punch somebody if the right circumstances presented themselves.
And the interesting and perhaps frightening thing is a lot of the scenarios that you used were realistic scenarios, things like being insulted in the queue for a nightclub, yeah, and things like that, which is a scenario that people could very often find themselves in. And it's the very situation where things like that could escalate. That does beg a question. Is there a difference in the response based on whether there was or wasn't alcohol involved, or was that part of the study?
That wasn't part of the study, and it was all hypothetical, obviously, for ethical reasons. We can't put people in the queue and see if they will actually punch somebody. But the interesting thing about crime is actually you will find that individual morality is the best predictor of crime. So when people think something is the right thing to do, predicts whether they're going to do it. And so hypothetical scenarios are a really good approximation for how people would behave. And one of the scenarios, I think a bus stop scenario, is something you're standing in a bus stop and somebody bumps into you. And there are versions of a scenario where somebody also insults you. And there are options. And while it wasn't just asking, would you punch this person, yes or no? It was just saying, which of these options are you likely to do? So they had other options of just saying, ignoring that person, not doing anything. But it really goes to show that given the right circumstances, then most of us will probably commit a crime. So even though only half of the respondents in that particular scenario said it, but I think that for most of us, there is the right circumstance in which we would commit a crime.
And did you get similar answers? And I'm fascinated by this, actually, because a widespread presumption would be that a lot of this violence, particularly at night, is fueled by alcohol or fueled by drugs. I would have expected that the situation at a bus stop, and shall we just theoretically say, a bus stop on a Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock, to my mind, would be very, very different to a nightclub queue on a Friday night, Saturday morning at midnight, for instance. Were you getting similar responses, or were you getting different responses based on the location? Because it seems to me there's a world of difference between a bus stop on a Monday afternoon and a nightclub queue at midnight on a Friday night, Saturday morning.
Yeah, and there was a difference. So nightclub Q, actually, it was very provocative. So a lot of people said that they would commit a crime in that particular. Because, yeah, everything, as I said, it's all context dependent. I always tell my students that they're way less likely to punch somebody in my lecture hall than they are, you know, just in their student pub down the road, right? So even in a very similar kind of situation within 500 meters of each other, different social settings call for different rules of behavior, but also cultural settings. And my other favorite example is, so I grew up in Russia, and Russia has a very kind of the culture of protecting yourself and protecting the people who are dear to you. So if somebody were to walk up to you in a pub and insult your mother, I'd say the expectation, especially if you're a man, were that you would punch that person. And if you don't, then your friends will look at you and think, oh, you're doing something strange, you're doing something weird. On the other hand, in the UK, if somebody comes up to you and insults you, normally the culture is just shrug and leave them alone and go away and think, well, they need help. So if you were to punch somebody in the Wetherspoons, I guess that does happen. But people would think, oh, are you okay? This random person walked up to you and insulted you and you've decided to punch him. That's not very normal. So it's all context dependent culturally, but also very specifically within the location.
Have you had the opportunity to compare what you found in terms of your hypothetical study with figures from police, from law enforcement or whatever, as to actually what does happen? Is there any way of seeing if your findings correlate with actually what does happen on the ground? I don't know, do the metrics exist to allow you to do that?
Yeah, you can see. So the problem with police recorded crime is that it's also quite specific, right? So A, police presence just, you know, changes crime around it. Obviously, you're way more likely to punch somebody when there is not a police officer, if there is somebody standing right behind you. But there is, yeah, we know that this is something that happens, and we know that circumstances change. And I'd say we know that environments are really important. And my obvious example is always, say, if I'm sitting in a room all by myself and I'm desperate to punch somebody in the face, but there's just physically nobody here to punch in the face, that I just can't do it. But again, you know, we need to think about, you know, oftentimes we think about crime as, again, a specific person. We think you need to be a specific person to commit a crime, or, you know, there is something about you, which is something different. And that usually stems from the media and the shows. On the other hand, we find that even Jeffrey Dahmer didn't kill anybody for 4 years, right? So there has to be something happened in the circumstance. It could be availability of victims, or it could be a different social norm, or something happened more globally that pushed people to do it. So even the most prolific offenders actually spend very little percentage of their time committing a crime. So there has to be something action dependent in there.
This was very much based on, from what I've read of the survey, it was very much based on people's reactions. Did you do any survey or any investigation into whether people would be proactive if, rather than reacting, if people would actually start something, if people would make the first move, cast the first insult, throw the first punch? Have you had a chance to look at that element of things?
The thing is, we don't exist in a vacuum. Humans don't, you know, we're always reacting to something. At no point are we not reacting to something. And some of the scenarios were quite, you were referring to the two scenarios, so the bus stop scenario and the nightclub queue scenario, which is violent crime, which is usually what we find interesting. But there's two more scenarios about a dropped wallet. So are you going to steal the money? So say somebody drops the wallet, are you going to take the money? So that I would call proactive, right? You're not necessarily reacting to something. It's just somebody's walking past, they drop the wallet. Are you going to take it? Yes or no? And it was really interesting because, again, by changing the scenario a bit, you could see a big difference. For example, first, you're presented to just the normal person sitting at the bar and they have some money sticking out. So some people said that they would steal that money, but a lot of people didn't. And then you present them with the same scenario, and this person who's sitting at the bar, they insult the bartender. So, you know, they're behaving rather rudely. And then a lot more people were to steal money from that person. So even when the perceived rudeness is not directed towards the person themselves, it changes the likelihood of people saying yes or no in a hypothetical scenario.
So they would make a moral judgment on the person and whether the person deserved to be stolen from or not would be based on that moral judgment.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying about that we commit crime in the right circumstances, because oftentimes we'll say, I'm not stealing money. I'm punishing this person for being a bad person. I'm not doing a bad thing. Or people, you know, punching somebody in a nightclub queue saying, well, I had to punch this person because they broke a rule. They insulted me for no reason, even though I'm just standing here in a queue. And our desire to punish a violation of a social norm is really, really high. And my favorite example of all time is the bin gate, you know, from the Great British Bake Off, when the woman took out somebody's ice cream and it melted, and the other contestant then, you know, threw the ice cream in the trash. And so many people went on Twitter to insult the old lady who just, you know, took somebody's ice cream out for 10 seconds. Even though it's a baking show that none of us have any personal investment in, but we are really engaged with punishing a violation of a social norm.
Right. It's fascinating. You also found, and we're going to finish on a positive, you also found where people may react to negativity with negativity. People also were, if they were presented with kindness or presented with positivity, they would also react the same way. So if you are shown kindness, you'll react with kindness.
Yeah. And we usually do. And we're highly cooperative species, right? And that's something that I found, that normally we cooperate a lot. We're really nice to each other. Mm-hmm. And I know some people think that, oh, it's all wolf eats wolf, it's all eye for an eye, you know, people are all out to get, you know, stuff for themselves. But that's actually not true. We cooperate a lot. We cooperate by, you know, keeping voices down in the library, or, you know, not pushing past each other, or, you know, everybody talks about how the UK is very good at queuing. And we do actually cooperate with each other a lot. And if you put people in the right circumstances, they will cooperate with you. Because if you're kind to people, they tend to be kind to you. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Evelyn Svingen, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning from the University of Birmingham, Associate Professor of Criminology. Evelyn, thank you very much indeed. That was rather interesting and food for thought indeed. Now, our competition was in relation to free membership for Fit 20. The question, who won the Women's World Cup? Was it Spain or was it Ireland? The answer, of course, was Spain. Our winner today is Mary O'Donnell in Mulroy Park in Carrigart. So Mary O'Donnell, Mulroy Park in Carrigart is today's winner. Mary, you go in to that draw, and on Friday we will draw the winner. Time for a short break. Back after these. It's the 9 till noon show into the final few minutes. Donal Kavanagh standing in for Greg on the show today. Greg making his way back from London after a very successful programme from the London Irish Vintage Show yesterday. And Greg back on the show as normal tomorrow. At the start, when we were doing our review of the papers, we referenced that Competition and Consumer Protection Commission confirmation that the research it's carried out into pensions has revealed some concerning gaps. The survey showed 1 in 10 45 to 64-year-olds don't have a pension, and pension ownership among the 45 to 54-year-old group stands at 76%. That's a sharp decline since 2022. Joined on the line by Muriel Dolan, who's Deputy Director of Communications with the CCPC. Muriel, good morning.
Good morning, Donna.
Muriel, the fact that a lot of people don't have pensions in that age group is going to be a worrying one, because we know the proportion of older people to younger people in the state is going to grow in the coming years. And when people don't have provision, it's potentially going to put a lot of pressure on the state in years to come.
Yes, it is. And that age group, I suppose, to say at the outset, it's never too late to start. And that's what I want to get across to your viewers this morning. Yeah, 1 in 10 of the over 45s currently don't have a pension, but it's never too late to start, because we have seen that a lot of people are now going to use other forms of income for their pensions rather than putting it into a pension. For example, 57% of people said they were going to use deposits or savings. What we would say to those people as well is that putting it into a pension makes much more sense. It's much better value for money because you get good tax relief on it. It also goes into long-term savings, so you have compound interest building up. And also with a lot of companies where you have pensions, your employer might pay into it as well. So there's all of those advantages of putting it into a pension. So it's never too late to start. So any of your listeners listening this morning, to have and start to the pension, it's really time to think about it now and to start saving into a pension.
There have been a number of initiatives over the years where, as you say, schemes were developed where the person would pay in and employers would pay a certain amount in as well. I mean, is it time perhaps for the government to look at introducing a similar system again to try and boost the numbers, particularly those perhaps from the late 20s to the 40s? Because, you know, if the sooner you can get this started, the sooner, you know, the better your prospects are going to be in years to come. I mean, is there a role here for government to bring in another sort of targeted scheme?
Well, there is, and they are looking at this, looking at auto-enrolment, and that will hopefully be introduced the second half of next year. So that means that, you know, there's certain criteria, you have to be earning over 20,000, you will be automatically enrolled into a pension. But also, your employer will have to pay contributions into it as well. So we feel that this is really going to be a game changer for trying to set people up for when they retire. Because as you said, like, the state pension may not be enough to sustain the lifestyle that you need or you want in retirement. So that's why it's so important that the government look at this. But it's also so important for people to review their pension, because sometimes, you know, it's sometimes very natural, you know, I have that box ticked, I have a pension. But if you don't review it over your lifetime, you don't know if it's going to be sufficient for what you want in retirement, because your needs can change. You know, maybe when you took out your pension, you weren't married, you hadn't children. Now you have children, you have a mortgage and all of that. And that's really, really important. Like, for example, I know that if my kids go to college, that I will be retired by the time they're in college. So I'm thinking of that now to make sure that I will have enough in my retirement to be able to help them, because I'll still have two dependents at that time. So reviewing your pension is so important, because as I said, you're different. Things change in your life and you might have different commitments or different responsibilities when it comes to retirement.
The fact that many people, one in four of those that don't have pensions, say, I mean, basically they simply can't afford it, that's going to be concerning. But maybe the auto-enrolment is one way of getting around that, that at least they make some contribution, and the fact that their employer will make a contribution as well, that will maybe help build up that pension pot, and certainly will be better than not having anything at all.
Yes, oh, absolutely. And I think it will help. And when you're paying into it, it just kind of focuses you, and then you know you have it. And then it's just not to forget about it. And that's really, really important, because, yes, you're paying into a certain amount, but you might have different needs in retirement and you might have to increase your contributions. And one thing we do say to people as well is, if you get an increase in your salary, or if you get a bonus, before you get used to that money, maybe put that into your pension. So increase your pension that way, your contributions to your pension, or even part of it would be good, because you haven't got used to that money yet. So, you know, put it into your pension, because you'll get tax relief on it as well. And also you're building up that income for when you retire.
Muriel Dolan, Deputy Director of Communications with the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. I'm afraid time has beaten us. That is the 9 till noon show for this morning. A very special thank you to all our contributors. Thanks to Caroline Orr for producing and for taking your calls. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. Greg's back tomorrow, but for myself, Donal, have a very good day.